Hello and welcome to Hat Trick. I am not your host, Braden Dalla-Coleman, also joined by your other not host, Elliot Tanti. Our regular host, Jordan Dalla-Coleman, is not feeling great and therefore will not be joining us. So Elliot and I have strung up a tin can telephone from my building across the street to his building, and we will be here with you today for the Hat Trick podcast. How's it going, Elliot?
Very well. I'm very excited to do this. This is the first time I've ever done a two-person podcast on Hat Trick.
Well, let's get right to it. Okay, let's talk about the WNBA draft. The women had their big draft tonight when we're recording this, just earlier this evening in Brooklyn, New York. The number one overall draft pick, the legend, the GOAT. Some might say Caitlin Clark went to the Indiana Fever. That's huge. She's like the next. She's the next.
Yeah.
Will she play in the WNBA? Or, Elliot, is there a world where Caitlin Clark gets drafted in the NBA?
Is that an option?
Why not? She has proven that she is the GOAT of women's basketball, and she's only played college. She is the all-time leading scorer. How could she not be considered good enough to play in the men's game?
Well, I wouldn't suggest that she isn't. I wouldn't know. I don't have the perspective to say one way or another. I'd love to see it.
Wouldn't it be amazing? Like, when you think about some of the other, like, I mean, it'd be an incredible statement, even just to draft Caitlin. You know, she still has to make training camp. She still has to, you know, make the team, but I think that would be an amazing gateway, at least, and an opportunity. I was talking to there's another player who's Juju Watkins, apparently is supposed to be absolutely phenomenal, upcoming star in NCAA women's basketball. We just continue to have these names this WNBA draft. Not to discredit anything from the WNBA. Like, I think Caitlin Clark will play for the Indiana Fever, and I think that, you know, she'll bring the WNBA into the next foray of its, you know, its greatness, or at least more eyes on it, more exposure to this sport, development of the game, more access for young women wanting to play this game. But there's something about the opportunity, if it ever presented itself. Like, we saw it in the NHL. We've had women play in the NHL. We've maybe not for long, no mainstays. There's the debate about, can they physically compete on the same level? It is a bit of a different game. It's a different size ball. But that said, like, the game itself doesn't change. So I could see it happening in basketball, whereas something like hockey, it's just a bit more of a challenge physically to compete.
You know, I'd love to see it, and I have no problem with it. I think it'd be exceptional. It'd be great, even with the seventh round pick, if a team wanted to take a chance on Caitlin. I'd be more than happy to see it, and I wouldn't have any issue with it. Are we there yet? Is that the journey that Caitlin Clark needs to take? Is that the best interest of her? I don't know.
Well, that's the other aspect of it, of course.
That's sort of like, does that distract away from her professional career in as she sort of, I don't know, at this point, is putting an established league back on the map? With all of the attention that the NCAA women's tournament has that she has created for women's basketball. Is that the right move for women's basketball? I don't care. She should do the best thing that's in the best interest of her. And if that's being the first woman that's drafted in the NBA, absolutely. I'm for it. I'm here for it. And I will cheer for her through and through. As a 6 foot point guard, absolutely. I think she could make it. And I cheer for her all the time. And I don't have an opinion because I don't know enough basketball to have an opinion one way or another. I'm glad that you suggested. I'm glad that you're excited for it. I'm glad that that's even an opportunity or an idea. And in fact, in the sports that you've mentioned, like you mentioned hockey, women have certainly broken through outside of Haley Wickenheiser, of course, who's the GOAT, like women's goalies, a little bit in golf. But like, yeah, like I'm totally for it, Brayden. I don't hate that as an idea, but like I also just want the women's game in basketball to succeed because it's frankly been a trailblazer sport for women's athletics and women's sport for a while now. And I don't want anyone to take anything, I don't want anything to take away from that.
What's
And
amazing about where the WNBA is, and it's not just Caitlin Clark. That's the other exciting thing. I don't think we've ever seen the star power that we have seen in college sport as we have in the women's game. And we talked about this a few podcasts ago, even in the last podcast, you guys talked about this. We have finally arrived in a place where the NBA is with these superstars, and they're just coming out of college right now, like Paige Bueckers, Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, and the list goes on and on, and Cameron Brink, the list goes on and on and on, and it's still a small league. Like, there's 12 teams, but the fact that there is that much saturation of superstars is so exciting, not just for the game itself, but the game as a broader globalization of it, like the access to it, like we said, younger girls seeing themselves playing. And I just think that there's something exciting for me about how good Caitlin Clark is. And I think the debate will continue for me about, is there a place for her in the NBA? Whether she makes it or not, I think the debate exists and deserves to live because she is that good. And I think for when it comes to access, kids seeing like, well, shit, like I could push the NBA. Maybe I could push that envelope one day. And I think if it's not Caitlin Clark, like
It's the next generation
the
or the next
next is
after
coming.
that. But look at the trailblazers in the NBA around just even coaching, too, right? Like management.
How do you mean?
All the other leagues are behind that in terms of like women in even like those like leadership roles outside of like just players, right? And I think it speaks to the fact that basketball, once again, is leading the charge in terms of like just like a much more, don't know, like pronounced and like holistic view around what sports excellence is. And it doesn't have to revolve around Olympics and or collegiate sports, which is hyper problematic in its own way. Like, I think this is outstanding. I think the Professional Women's Hockey Association is a direct result of the WNBA. Like, the WNBA is a proven concept that has led to so much growth in so much women's sports. And we're seeing the outcomes of that. And I just love, like, when I was watching. That when I was watching March Madness and the Women's March Madness tournament, and these young girls just cheering and so excited for it. And it's the same thing. I watched that now, and like the first year of the professional women's, and even tonight, like we're watching an outstanding, or last night, we're watching this outstanding international tournament between Hockey Canada and USA Hockey, women's sports, went to overtime. Like, now people are calling for, like, well, that tournament should be three games. That game was so good. You know, like, there's outstanding sports there.
Yep.
It all goes back to the emergence of the WNBA and Caitlin Clark. I think she has said, like, this is because I got to watch people do this before, and that's amazing. And, like, imagine how many generations.
But also, like, and we've talked about the partnering that the NBA has done with the WNBA, like, all the way down to in the draft Monday night. When the commissioner comes out and goes, the blah, 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 first pick in the blah, blah, blah. The NBA has this really classy, like, doon, doo, doo, doon, doon, doon. It was the exact same. Like, they've outlined it the exact same way. They make it feel like it's the same event. There's nothing less about it. It's just, oh, it's just so awesome to see. And it's getting better and bigger, and I just love it. Love to
It's
see
the
it.
way it should be done. The NBA and the WNBA have figured it out, and they have built after Title IX. And I, you know, a couple episodes ago, I talked about the importance of Title IX and from a politics standpoint. But after Title IX, the most impactful thing I think in women's sports, I would say, and you know, someone much more informed could come after me on this, is the emergence of the WNBA and the partnership with the NBA. And, like, you think about the names that have come through and what that means now, and it's all coming together. And it's an investment in women's sports. And the fruition of that is TV deals and ultimately money, but just like a belief that this sport is equal and better than.
And it's globalized now. Like,
It's global.
there was a Canadian, Aaliyah Edwards, who was drafted this in the first round. There were two players from France. Like, this, it's not just America. And I think that that's the other piece of it that's really exciting, is that it's starting to reach further and further, and get
Well, the other
better.
thing is, I think this is more formative, and we've gone way over time on this, but, like, when you talk about building sport or, like, formative sport, like, it needs to include everyone in our community and in all populations. And if it's not accessible to both genders, then it's not everyone. And that's what's been beautiful about basketball. That's what they've done so well. And that's what we need to achieve. Like, that's Like, sport is inherently good. It's good for teamwork. We know this. There's been tons of studies about, like, why teamwork and involvement and, like, losing and winning is all good and formative in, like, people's lives.
Playing it
Why
and watching
is
it,
that?
like, community
Why
building. It's, yeah, it's,
are we cutting that off to a gender? Like,
yeah.
why is that gendered? It shouldn't be. And yeah, anyway. We're speaking to the converted on this show,
Well,
but, like, I just think, like,
keep
that's the
watching it.
way we need.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you. I'm glad we talked about that, because, man, am I excited about the WNBA these days.
Yeah, me too. Topic two, we're going to talk NBA playoffs. Braden, there's a ton of things going on right now, none of which I understand. So, in layman's terms, can you explain how it is that anyone that's not ranked sixth or better actually gets into the playoffs in NBA? Because I simply cannot figure it out.
Yes, so they've decided, for more fun fanfare, as the NBA continues to try to do, They have this play-in tournament, which I think they've had now for probably about 4 years, I want to say. And essentially, what it means is the 7 and 8 seed play essentially a wild card game. It's a one-off game. Whoever wins that goes on to play the 2 seed. And the loser of that game goes on to play the play-in game of the 9 and 10 seed. So, for example, in the West, the Lakers and the Pelicans, which I believe are the 7, 8 seed respectively, will play. Now, say the Lakers win, which is my prediction. They will go on to play the 2 seed, which I don't even know because that top of the bracket is, I think it's Denver, frankly.
Yeah, the Denver Nuggets, that's what I'm looking at.
The loser of that game, let's say the Pelicans, go on to play the winning team of the 9 and 10, which is right now Golden State and Sacramento. So the loser of the 9 and 10 is out, and the winner plays the loser of the 7, 8 seed. It's very complex. It's actually not, but the way I just described it, it sounds way more difficult than it is. 7 and 8 seed play, the 9 and 10 seed play, and then two teams from that move into the proper best of seven series on both sides. Wow. I wish I had a much more succinct answer, but that is what the NBA has done to us.
All right. Well, you unsuccessfully, at least for me, described the NBA playoff picture. Let's go conference by conference. If you
Okay.
had to pick a team out of the Eastern Conference to make it to the NBA championship, who would you pick as your favorite and who would you pick as your wild card and why?
Okay, well, my favorite, and I think all bookie favorites have the Boston Celtics. They have 64 wins this year. I think their point differential is 11.4. The last time that happened, actually, I think there's four teams that have had that point differential or higher, and all of them have won a championship. The Bucks with Robertson, I think. The Lakers had that kind of like it's just unprecedented the amount of wins that this team has put together and how many points they have superseded against other teams. That is the team I think will come out of the East. Frankly, I think that they will win all of it. However, my wild card, I think coming out of the East is going to be the Indiana Pacers. This is a bit of a weird one because they currently sit sixth, but I think the placement that they have, they're currently matched up with the Bucks in the first round. The Bucks are without a healthy Giannis Antetokounmpo. Damian Lillard hasn't really gelled with his time in the Bucks, so it's not looking good for the Bucks. However, the Indiana Pacers have this young upstart team. They're really fast. They're scoring buckets off the rush. This team is coached by Rick Carlisle, like one of the legends in basketball. I think that this team's going to surprise some people and turn heads this offseason.
Okay. All right. That's great analysis from the Eastern Conference. And frankly, same question from the West. Like, who do you like?
Sure.
Who's the obvious choice to make it to the NBA Finals from the West? But who's a long shot? Or who do you have, long money on?
After the Denver Nuggets, who I have coming out of the West, they are the team to repeat. It gets pretty hairy. There's a lot of teams that are really, really good and sort of just all in this, like they're only about 4 or 5 points different or games different pretty much from like the 4th seed all the way down to the 10th seed. So this one's tricky. I would love to see a Cinderella story in the West. But I would not be at all surprised if we saw Dallas make a run. I think there's something still to be said about Luka and you know just the heights that he's destined for. There's a big part of me that wants to see LeBron succeed again, but I just don't know if any team's going to be able to overcome Jokic and the Nuggets. The chicken nuggets, as my friend likes to call them.
So would your bet be that anyone that beats the Nuggets has, like, I don't know, a Montreal Canadiens story from a couple of years back, like, a wild card that could be?
Totally, totally. And just like the Montreal Canadiens that year back, they're gonna fall to the Giants that are the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are just way too good, man. What they did bringing in Jrue Holiday this year, and they rewarded that move by signing him to a multi-year extension. Like that was the piece that they kind of needed to make things really, really push them over the edge. Jason Tatum is one of the best to ever do it, and they've got a team that's working really, really efficiently.
All right, we'll see what happens in the NBA playoffs. I'm sure we'll cover it again.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Who do you have out of curiosity? If it's not the Celtics or the Nuggets, who's your wild card from each team?
In the West, I always like to throw things down, like the Thunder.
The Thunder. Well, they're currently the first seed. Sam
Yeah.
Presti for president, man. This guy, so, he sold all of his high pros or high assets, getting rid of Paul George, Russell Westbrook. Like the team was crushed, losing all of these superstars. They they accumulated over 17 first round draft picks over the course of the next like 10 years.
Yeah.
And they're currently sitting in the first seed with the young one of the
57 and
youngest
25, man.
teams.
How could you bet against them?
Presti for president.
And yeah, I don't know. I always love a Cinderella story with the Heat.
The Raptors? No, they're out.
No, I said the Heat.
Oh, right, the Raptors. They're out.
All
Miami Heat. Well,
right.
that's an interesting story because they have come so close so many times. They know what it's like to play. That team's not far from the team that played in the bubble, not far from the team that was in the finals, what, last year? They played the Nuggets last year? Like this team is so close. They're gonna find more heartache this year, but I do think that they might be able to make a run.
That's my bet.
All right.
All right. That's what too.
Who do you think Jordan would have picked?
I don't think he would have participated in the segment, if I was to be honest.
He would have said, "Why do they have this stupid play-in
Yeah.
tournament?
But can you talk to me about this play-in?
Why do they have
Can
and
you
how
talk to
does
me about
the
the weirdest
in-season
thing in
tournament
the tournament
affect
and
the
why is this a
playoff
disgrace?
part of this season?"
Hey, if you're a fan of Formula One, then I've got the perfect podcast for you. The Pit Stop Podcast, presented by the Ordinary Podcasting Network. After every single race of the Formula One schedule, Jordan and Tyler will break it down, give you some news, analysis, insight, before answering your questions and setting you up for the next race. That's the Pit Stop Podcast, available everywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, topic three, Braden, we're walking into MLB season and we're very excited about baseball. It's probably why we exist as a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan begged us to talk about it.
Yeah, Jordan continually says, like, talk about baseball every time that you can. And we basically have to, like, he wanted to so bad tonight, but he was sick with how much he wanted to talk about baseball. Anyway, we are 17 games into the season with this Toronto Blue Jays team. And I've got to say, they had a horrific start, a horrific schedule starting into the season. I believe it was the Astros. It was Tampa Bay, teams that they have like traditionally just sucked at every time. Came out 4-6. And now they've gone through a series with the Yankees and are currently in one. 9-8. Like, is this team exceeding expectations or the best team that's ever existed? I don't know. Tell me.
This is not the best team that's ever existed. However, they're 17 games in to a season of, what would Jordan say, 582 games?
Yeah, like 3,700 games,
I think. I don't know, man. Like, they actually look a lot better than I had expected. You always want to see free agents sort of come in and pump the team a little bit. Justin Turner's a really great addition on as a DH, I think. It's nice to see guys like, you know, when you trade for a guy, especially when you trade away fan favorites like Gurriel or even a prospect like Moreno, you want to see the returns be successful. And Varsho was like, he was good last year, but what he's doing this year, man, my God, that boy's hitting the ball really well. You know, they moved Guerrero to the second spot in the lineup, which I think things are just clicking. Things are working nicely. I think if they start to slide midseason, hot take, John Schneider might lose his job. I think
that's early to call that.
Well, it's funny you say that because like there's sort of some indication already in the fan pressure of it. You know how things ended last season? People were not fond of the decisions he was making, and no, it wasn't solely on him. However, there is responsibility does lie in the person managing a team a lot of the time. In any team sport, the responsibility usually comes down to a coach or a manager. In the opening series, when John Schneider was announced, I don't know if you caught this, he was announced onto the field and Rogers Center erupted in boos. So there seems to be a bit of a consensus that people aren't totally on board with what John Schneider's bringing. Now, if the team turns and, you know, starts to climb in the AL East, and I think they're going to have a hard time climbing against the Yankees just with the lineup that they have, things could get hairy. And I think the other part of that is they adjusted Don Mattingly's official title from bench coach to associate coach. We always love when the titles change. But I think that sort of is also a bit of a telltale sign that somebody else is making moves or somebody else is making the call here. I'm not sure if John Schneider has as much say as he once did with the Blue Jays right now.
You know, I can't speak to the specifics on that. What I would say is, having watched baseball for all of my life and been more invested in the last 3 years, you can't make a judgment on a team after 17 games, given, as Jordan regularly says, there are 507,000 games in a season. Mm-hmm. I think it's early on. I think after the first two seasons that or series, they came out 4-6. That was like a healthy record. And since then, they are now 9-8, and they haven't lost any ground next to what I would say is like the best team in baseball right now, which is the Yankees. A lot of Padres on the Yankees, I would say.
Let's talk about the Padres here. I mean, we are the official Padre podcast.
I don't know that we're the Padres official Padres podcast, but we have a huge Padres fan on the show. Yeah,
they're currently second in the NL West. Yeah. The Dodgers just beat
the Dodgers in a series.
The Dodgers are the Dodgers, with or without Shohei Ohtani. Do they have a shot this season? Like, they didn't make a lot of moves in the offseason, but did they need to?
Well, I mean, I think they did make a lot of moves in the offseason, but just dumping a lot of salary and people.
I
Yeah,
see. I see. On
I
the
think
out.
they're like a well-equipped team. Like they're in it for the long haul. They're baseball people. And that's what I've kind of come to learn about the Padres in the last 2 years. You buy assets and you sell out. You buy assets when they're low, you sell assets when they're high. And this is hopefully the fruition of a franchise that competes against, in their league, like they have to go up against the Dodgers consistently a lot of times every year. And the Dodgers are going to be like a high income team and they have to compete. And at least early on in the season, and this is what I'd say the same thing about the Padres opposite than I said about the Blue Jays, is that it's early on in the season. Yeah, it's good, but it's 162 games or 164 games, just as the Blue Jays are doing well right now, but it's 164 games. We'll see. But they positioned themselves well through the first 17 games or 19 games for the Padres. I mean, you can't complain, right? Like, this
No.
is what you want to see, the consistency and, I don't know, building of a franchise.
So, something I do want to complain about when it comes to baseball.
Well,
What is it going to take to implement a salary cap?
why does it matter
Why does it matter?
in this league? Why does it matter?
Well, how are those small market teams doing? When was the last time you saw the Milwaukee Brewers succeed in anything? When was the last time you saw the Cincinnati Reds do anything?
Or the
Colorado Rockies.
Marlins, we can go through it.
Yeah, like this is crazy though. $700 million, and that's just one guy on the Dodgers, and that's not like and they They just blink at that. The Yankees are loaded this year. The Dodgers, once again, are loaded this year. So what do you mean this does it matter? This isn't
Well,
good for there. Where's the parity in the league? Where's
but this
the
is the thing I would ask. Okay, so let's compare it to the NHL right now. Definitely has a salary cap. We're watching a wicked race in the East for playoff contention. Five teams, right? All that parity. Is that parity brought to you by the salary cap? Maybe, at least in the NHL, it is. Every year, MLB comes down to the final weekend about which team in which division at what time is going to make it into the playoffs.
Yes, and I can almost guarantee that every single time the teams that are already locked in to a one seed or a bye are those teams that have they're like $400 million over the salary tax.
Yeah. I
So,
mean, I
yeah,
don't.
I think it matters. I think it matters. I don't think it's healthy. I mean, if you live in LA, it's fantastic. You're thrilled. You got another fun, star to add to the roster. But I don't think it serves the game the way that we've seen the success of it in the NHL. I think there's success in the
Okay, but
NHL.
if you're a small market team and you just spent $700 million on Shohei Ohtani, and then what happens happens, is that good for your market?
What do you mean, what happens, happens?
The gambling scandal?
I don't think that has anything to do with the 700 million.
No, but if you made that investment in
Oh,
that
yeah.
kind of player,
Oh.
so let's say he was like the Connor McDavid, like, so he
Yeah,
was.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, does that not, and now he can't play and he can't do things, like, it's different.
Well, he's not playing. He's playing right now.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, Braden? Like,
Yeah, it's
it
not
does
ideal.
change. It's
Not
like,
ideal.
if you can't, you couldn't, like, okay, if I was the Twins and I was like all in on Shohei Ohtani, let's just say, like, that's my, the Twins might not be a good example.
Okay, let's say the Chicago White Sox.
Yes. Okay. And you were all in on that. And then all of a sudden he comes in there and he's full of scandal.
Yeah.
Is that like good for that small market team? Or does it just tank it eventually?
No, I don't think scandal's good for any team. I don't think, I mean, it's easier, I guess, the Dodgers because you got other stars you can look at. But no, it certainly doesn't help. I mean, man, what a ridiculous.
At the end of the day,
however,
I'm a consummate Padres fan. I've lived through 3 years of Fernando Tatis. He broke his fucking arm.
Yeah.
Mountain biking in the off season.
Did drugs.
Used drugs to try and get back. Well,
yeah.
As they say, to try and get back into the league, and then was gone from that. They wasted a year on Machado. They lost Soto in that. They lost like half of the Yankees are now Padres players through because they couldn't. I mean, their owner also died. But like, you know, you waste year like for small market teams if you don't have an owner that's willing to do it. Like that's.
But that's the. I think that's the problem. Is that if every owner's not willing to do that, then you can't. There's the bar isn't set at the same level. It's like, I just don't. There's nothing good about it, and I also don't. I mean, this comes into the like. Is he worth $700 million? Is you know, if there was a cap and there was no team that was gonna pay him that, he still wants to play in the MLB. He's gonna have to sign a cheaper deal. I don't know. I find the salaries in the MLB absolutely ridiculous.
They pay a tax on all of these salaries anyway, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't affect them when it comes to who they have on their roster.
Yeah, if you're just like a rich team. But does it make it more competitive?
I think it would. Because you wouldn't be able to afford everybody that they have. The Yankees lineup would not be the same
salary lineup. Caps in like you could do a bullpen salary cap.
Yeah, and that's then interesting.
Keep it like free range on like everyone else. Now it's because they got that. Now it's like Disney hitters all the time. Like maybe you can salary cap the pitching, the bullpen. That would be very interesting.
I'd be curious. So what Rob Manfred announced that he's going to be retiring in 2 years, 2 or 3 years, or maybe 5. I think he's got five years left as a commissioner. I think that might be on the table the minute the next commissioner comes to play.
I think you and I could tandem the commissioner for baseball.
You think so? I think we'd be good at it.
We'd have spice in it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd wear a Blue Jays hat all the time, but I would still represent the rest of the league.
Absolutely. You know, I could speak for the owners and you could speak for the players.
Okay. Let's put that pitch together. I think that would work. What do you think Jordan might have to say at this point?
I think he'd say we'd fixed baseball and he might watch it one time.
One inning. Right on. Awesome. Well,
this might be the last episode.
The lost or the last? Thank you, everybody, for sticking with us through the years. This has been a really, really fun podcast to do. This will be our last episode. And
Brayden, that's hat trick.
Patrick is a member of the Ordinary Podcasting Network. It's produced every week by Jordan Dowler Coltman and Brayden Dowler Coltman. And follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks for listening.
The Ordinary Podcasting Network wishes to acknowledge that the lands on which our conversations take place include Treaty 6 territory, the traditional meeting ground and home for many Indigenous peoples, including the Cree, Dene, Soto, Blackfoot, Métis, and the Nakota Sioux peoples, as well as the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit whose footsteps have marked these lands for generations. And we extend our appreciation for the opportunity to live, create, and share stories on these territories.
The Ordinary Podcasting Network intends to engage in conversations and dialogue which acknowledge that reconciliation is not a destination, but a journey, and that we remain committed to practicing our craft in a decolonized space.